My name is Marco. I've actually, I think I missed it, but anyway, I'll just say it again. Hello and welcome to the latest Cricket Web podcast. My name is Marco, known on the Cricket Web forums as Quincy Wagstaff. And joining me for the first time for his inaugural appearance on Cricket Web podcast is the user known by Honest Barani. How are you going?
I'm good, Marco. How are you? How is it right now in Australia?
No, I'm going fine. So are you in Australia, are you?
No. I'm in India.
Oh, okay. Yes, I'm going well. Hoping this all goes to plan, you know, sort of getting the podcast up and running. So I presume you're a long time cricket fan. I suppose focus on India.
Yeah, I can tell you the first time I went to a cricket match was the famous tied test match at Chennai in 1987. I was 3.5 years old and my uncles took me. So, yeah. Funnily, that's not the first sporting thing that I remember. I still remember watching the 1986 Wimbledon finals in a neighbor's house for some reason. But yeah, pretty much started young as a cricket fan and been a cricket fan since then.
Yeah, I do remember that. I think I'm a bit older than you, but I was quite younger back then. I think I went to a one day at the MCG in about 1984, Australia the West Indies, but I don't know which one it was. But yeah, that was the first cricket match, international cricket match I went to. But anyway, so I probably will. I think just thinking back to this podcast, we'll probably talk about the two test series that have been going on. India and the West Indies, and Australia and Pakistan, both two tests just recently completed. Mm-hmm. We'll begin with the India-West Indies test series. I don't know how much you watched of that, Barani, so we'll just thinking your thoughts of it.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to live streaming, I actually watched almost all of both the test series, actually. So that was nice. My job's flexible enough to let me do that these days. See, we cannot all charge our clients for watching cricket, but I do try my best to be a buggy. So.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So
I mispronounced his name on purpose too, by the way. So. So anyway, yeah, it was good. I mean, it's safe to say both series went as expected. Probably it was good to see Australia actually save a game. We almost never see long, hard fought out draws these days. And, you know, in that way, it was quite the opposite when we saw the West Indies play in India. I think they were just really, you know, the Windies batsmen were just trying too hard to kind of, you know, hit people out of the attack. They did not really trust their defense. So, yeah, my opinion is I don't think anybody gained anything from those series except maybe some money from the boards. It was pretty much what we expected. So, yeah, that's my...
Yeah. I mean, I watched very little of the India-West Indies test series, but I was surprised how poor the West Indies were because they've improved quite a bit as a test side, I think, under Jason Holder. I think they missed him in the first test. I think they really need his captaincy. I think that, you know, and he's bowling now, who's been very good this year. And, yeah, they just, I guess, look, probably underestimating how tough it is to beat in India. I mean, I wasn't expecting them to win, but I thought they'd push them a bit harder. But as you just said, probably they just didn't have the faith in their batting, which is definitely their weakness. And yeah, so approved. And did India get much out of it, do you think, or after the England series, you know, any?
I don't know. I mean, it's funny, right? In this Virat Kohli era of Indian cricket, it's just, you know, we seem to have everything that we need to be able to win overseas, and yet we kind of screw up. And it's kind of frustrating because a lot of these go down to pretty poor decision making from the brain trust of the team management, you know. And I'm not saying this as a guy who intends to blame Kohli or Shastri for this. I'm pretty sure they're doing it with the right intentions. They think of you know, they're probably making decisions that they think will help the team win the games, but it's just that, you know, we always keep messing up. So yeah, from that perspective, there is nothing that we learned in this series. I guess emergence of Prithvi Shaw was good. It's good to see somebody deliver on promise, right? So a kid comes in, yeah, he's 18 years old, you don't know, he's bigged up, but then, you know, when he comes in and he actually delivers the goods, it's always nice. But beyond that, I don't think we learn much.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I actually did see a bit of his innings in the second test, in the first innings. That was, yeah, he really got the crowd going. I think he's obviously become a fan favourite. But, I mean, the way he played, it was quite exciting. And he just, well, I guess you could say it was a shame he sort of gave his wicket away. I think he hit it to about cover in the air. But I think that's the way he's playing at the moment. He's playing with such flair that you don't want to rein that in at this point in time. No, so it was quite exciting watching that innings. Who impressed you from the West Indies? I mean, was there anybody who you thought, well, yeah, they look a pretty decent player?
I think, I mean, obviously Jason Holder, because, and funnily enough, you know, I was just thinking of this yesterday when I was watching Mohammad Abbas run through the Australian team. I think there is a lot of similarity in the way both Holder and Abbas bowled, you know, in trying conditions in the subcontinent where you don't get much bounce, you don't get much pace, and sort of, you know, the straw-coloured grass kind of kills whatever momentum is there on the ball. But I think that was very interesting to see. But apart from that, I think I like Hope, Shai Hope. I mean, he didn't convert anything to a big innings, but I think he looked good. He continues to show why he's one of the best young talents to have emerged from West Indies for a long time. And I honestly think they're just a Darren Bravo away from being a decent test match side. You know, I just hope some sanity prevails on their board and they can recall him. I think he's back for the T20s, so hopefully it's a start.
So, sorry, who is back? Is that Darren Bravo?
Yeah, Darren Bravo, yeah.
Is he back for the T20s? I actually didn't know that. I was just going to bring him up because, that stood out. I mean, that would have stood out a mile. That's the player, the batsman they missed, because he just looks a classy batsman. It's just been such a waste for beginning on 2 years now, 18 months, I think, since he's played for the West Indies, and, you know, just such a waste that they can't afford. Yeah, hopefully he does make it back, because, you know, they're just lacking quality. But, yeah, so we'll move on to it was a pretty predictable series, a bit of a disappointment. And we'll move on to the Australian-Pakistan series. And this is one I did watch, you know, obviously a lot of better time slots, actually, as well. I'll give my 2 cents in. It was actually a very enjoyable series in its way, attritional at times, but I mean, the first test actually turned it into a classic by the end. I mean, it was one of the great test endings, you know. And I think above all else, if nothing else, that test match just showed the foolishness of people who are trying to push for four-day test cricket. I mean, I just see that as a totally needless change to test cricket, such a fundamental change. And you just saw the value, you know, that the that at 5 days, it's just can become an epic. And I just think 4 day cricket is just gonna, well, it just would make virtually impossible seeing what we saw, that Australia batted, I think, 4 and a bit sessions. I mean, you just couldn't see a side saving the match hardly ever. Maybe to avoid an innings defeat, maybe, but not in the fourth innings. So there's that. What did you think of the series?
No, I was actually pretty impressed with what Australia did in that first test. I mean, it was disappointing to see them crumble in the second test, but, you know, people have been writing about it. I've seen a lot of articles online on, you know, a lot of people on Twitter just stating how they prepared for spin and they were kind of blindsided by Abbas. You know, but I think that was a really great performance. Like I said, you don't see people, you know, bat out that many sessions to save a game these days. I mean, I don't know. I really only recall some very old innings, probably the one by McCallum, but even that was not this dire. So Maybe the one where McCollum made a big knock against India when we went there some time back, 2014 or so. But really, apart from that, I don't remember a good rear guard, match saving effort in ages. So it was really nice to see. And I think, to be honest, I think this template was there for Australia from their tour of India. I think they played with a lot of arrogance. There was a lot of maybe it was a plan, maybe it went too far. I don't know when with sandpaper cricket and all that. But while that was there, a lot of aggression, a lot of sledging, most of it needless. But that was there in their playing. What I did see was in their batting, there was a real lack of ego. You always see some hubris from the Australian batsmen. They kind of want to dominate, but that was not there when they toured in India. You could see even David Warner was trying his best to kind of put his head down and just try to survive and try to get a score, try to get himself in and get used to everything. And and I think that's just carried on. I know there has been a change in the management and people, but I think that attitude has really helped them. And to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if they are able to pull off a series sometime soon in either Sri Lanka or Bangladesh. I think this attitude is really going to help them as long as they can stick to it.
Oh, yeah, that might be for a future podcast discussing the Australian India Test series. That'll be a very interesting one, certainly on its own. As weak as Australia's batting is, will be this summer, I just think the fact that no Asian side has ever won a Test series in Australia, I mean, you can't discount that. Even though you think the planets have aligned for India, that, with such a weakened batting lineup, that
No,
they really
every time
imagine.
India tours, somebody becomes a better batsman. You can count on it. We specialize in ensuring people get back to form. So it might be the Ashes' turn this time. You might hate us for that. It might cost you the Ashes, but you will still win the series this time. That's what I think.
Well, it reminds me, I remember this is speaking of mid-80s Test matches. I remember as a young kid when Australia, they were very weakened because of all the rebel tourists. It was about 16, 17 players were gone, and India toured, who were quite a strong side back then in 85, 86, and they dominated the series, and they scored runs galore. Australia's bowling was very weak, and Gavaskar, Azharuddin, and I think Vensarkar would have been playing, and Kapil
I
Dev,
think
and I
even
was like, everybody
Srikanth got a
sounds.
hundred or something there, right?
Yeah, Chris
That's
Srikanth, just about he got like a century off a run of
it.
ball, but they actually didn't win the series. They could only draw it. It's just like it's almost, they couldn't quite finish it off, even though they really dominated the series. So that's going to be, sort of the mental thing, I think, to actually believe they can do it. But actually, getting back to this Test series, yeah, I agree. There was a lot of disappointment, just in the local commentary and analysis after Australia's performance in this test. That's understandable, but I mean, realistically, I think most would expect them to lose this 2-0, pretty badly. I mean, you lose three half, literally half your batting lineup from South Africa are gone, and this is, remember, Australia got thrashed 2-0. 4 years ago, the last time they played in these conditions against Pakistan. So it's not like they used to dominate. So, and with Hazelwood and Cummins, and I think they really missed Pat Cummins. I don't think Hazelwood would have done much on these pitches, to be honest. But Pat Cummins, he seems to be a bowler who'd find something on dead pitches. He can really lift, and that's what they really hurt them at times. In their bowling, Stark, he's I think he lacked a bit of match fitness in the first test, and then the second he started to get going. He actually looked quite good, but then he got injured. And Siddle, I don't think is up to it anymore. I think his time has passed. But they really miss Cummins to just get a wicket out of nowhere, because once Pakistan got on top in the batting, sort of they were. Yeah, apart from Nathan Lyon, there wasn't much of a threat there. But to actually get that draw, yeah, like you said, I mean, that was, I think it was above expectations. I mean, they were in a hiding to nothing, in this tour. And look, Pakistan probably didn't help. They sent What I take from Pakistan, I mean, their first test, I think, you know, they dawdled a bit when they were doing their declaration and probably they thought it was just going to happen. And I think Safra's the captain, I think he didn't come across, he probably didn't turn out that well, that test, because he seemed to get visually a bit agitated. He showed his frustrations and he was a bit timid in his captaincy. So I was really impressed with his response in the second test, because I think that innings in the first test, when Australia, I mean the second, in the first day, when Pakistan were 5 for 50 or so, his counter-attacking, his energy, I think, really turned the test match. And I think it's really determined to reassert himself and really show, you know, we should win this series. We're not going to let this slip. And that was very impressive for him. And you know, both sides probably can take a lot of out of it. What do you think? I think it'd be fair to say, I think this will be the last we see Wahab Rehaz in test level. He was very disappointing. I think that was a bit of a punt by Pakistan. He'd been out of the favour for a couple of years, or 12 to 18 months, and yeah, I think they find out why they let him go in the first place. And the batting was quite solid. They probably would like to make a few centuries, but I don't think they got. Yeah, they, you know, apart from that, you know, that 4 wickets and 6 balls by line, their batting was pretty solid most of the way. I must admit, I think Hafiz, I know he got that century, but he looked pretty wobbly the rest of the series. I don't know how long they want to persist with him, but I know. And as Ali's, they want probably to get back in better form. But look, it was overall a pretty good series for them.
No, I think, one thing about Pakistan is that they kind of fly under the radar as a test side, you know, because we don't have, or at least, you know, what I feel is with respect to media coverage and with respect to, you know, how much basically is written about them. I think Pakistan as a test side, they fly under the radar a lot. And I think under Misbah, that was something he probably enjoyed. But, you know, they have become a very solid test side, you know. You don't say that about Pakistan usually, but they are a very dependable. You kind of know what you're getting with this Pakistan side, I think. And that's been the case ever since Misbah took over, you know. You don't see something, probably the run out, right? That was probably something that even that was something you might expect to see from a Pakistan side, though. So it's really fascinating to see how they have come along and, you know, how much of Misbah's influence is still there on that team. And I think Mickey Arthur is probably the right type of coach for them. I always thought it should be either Mickey Arthur or, it was Ray Jennings. Yeah, Ray Jennings. You know, they kind of need the hard taskmaster type coaches, because they do tend to kind of take it easy at some point or the other in their side. So, you know, unless they are playing against India, for which somehow they all seem to get up. But, you know, I think that was really interesting to see. And I think as far as, you know, new players are concerned from this series, I was really, I mean, Kawaja has kind of come of age as a test batsman, I would say, in overseas conditions. That was really wonderful to see from both Australian and kind of world cricket's point of view. You know, he's a good looking player. He's kind of more orthodox in the way he paces his innings sometimes. He has really good shots. Crowd-pleasing shots as well. So, good to see him do well. And I like the look of Labuschagne, you know. South Africa always seem to export very exciting players. So, they never end up playing for South Africa, but they play for other countries.
He showed a bit with the bat, but his bowling was a big surprise, because nobody, I think, really realised he, you know, was more than just bowl one over maybe a series. But he actually, I mean, it was a bit embarrassing for John Holland, but he was preferred to John Holland by the end, because he actually was much more dangerous. It was interesting watching Labuschagne bowl. He bowls a very straight line. It's not like Shane Warne, who used to get a lot of drift. He bowls it pretty much straight down the line, and it's usually just outside off stump, but he can, you know, he actually can get quite on a roll. He's actually quite reliable. You know, he bowls the occasional bad ball, but he was actually pretty consistent for a part-time leg spinner. It was quite impressive. I'm interested whether that will be a factor in him maybe staying in the test side. Will they say, well, you know, he could be a good fifth bowler, fifth or sixth bowler. I mean, he's, you know, in Australian conditions with pitches, a bit of bounce, maybe he could get a few, you know, and it'd be a good compliment to Lyon.
I mean, especially if you're going to play Cummins, Hazelwood and Stark, right? And they're made of glass. So you need guys who can bowl a lot of overs, you know, in case they're not able to kind of fire through the opposition's batting, you know. Let's say if you don't bowl out an opposition within 50 overs, you're looking at a lot of bowling for those three guys. And I think from that perspective, Australia will be better served if they have a Labuschagne as their all-rounder than Mitch Marsh. Because
I agree, you know, yeah.
Marsh is going to break down anyway as well, so it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, he's bowling. I mean, geez, we could talk about his bat, but his bowling's, you know, I think it's pretty underwhelming. He's had one or two notable spells, but he just is a fill-in. I mean, the funny thing about Labuschagne, I was just thinking he's more dangerous as a bowler than I overthought Marsh was, which Marsh was. You know, he's actually, you know, a bit of interest, you know, it's you know, he sort of, well, this is getting interesting. I never really got on top of him during the series. I mean, he actually beat the bat quite a bit. It wasn't like he was bowling waist-high full tosses and I was trying to hit him out of the ground. He actually was genuinely good deliveries. So it just whether he can work on that and develop that, because that could make...
Yeah. I would say they need Marsh out of the side for the time being, and probably Maxwell and, sorry, I think I missed a little bit of what you said due to bad connection. You able to hear me?
Oh, yeah, I just saw that. Yeah.
All right, yeah. So what I was basically saying is if you have Maxwell and Labuschagne at 5 and 6, I think that gives you some pretty good options, you know, as a batting side, because you also have guys to bowl a lot of overs. And, you know, if you go to the subcontinent, you don't have to worry about having to pick the second spinner. You still have these two guys. So, yeah, that should be good, I think, for Australia. True.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. Because I think under perfect conditions, I'd want to have Stark, Hazelwood and Cummins, actually, you know, even in the subcontinent, they probably want to prefer to pick all those three, and this gives them the option. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of issues for Australia. I mean, the one that stands out for me, because we'll probably wrap it up after this. I don't know how long we've been going for, but it's probably been flying on. But Mitch Marsh, I think everybody's talking about in Australia here, Sean Marsh, you know, that he's 35 and he's had a terrible last six tests and all that. And, you know, that's by the way, but I think with Mitch Marsh is they've invested a lot of time and given him a lot of test matches. They've shown a lot of faith in him. And, you know, they're giving the vice captaincy. He was vice captain. He's joint vice captain, but because Hazelwood wasn't there, he was vice captain. So that's like, you know, quite a responsibility. You know, sign of faith. And what he's batting, he just is nowhere near a top six batsman. I mean, I think it was really disappointing for Australia that not just did he fail, but the way he failed against a Bass that you could almost predict that if he just pitches on the stumps, like he's going to be LBW. He's going to plant his foot, you know, across the crease, you know, and he bowls a full ball and he's going to be LBW when he bats outside the ball. And that happened at least twice this series. And the thing is, I remember him doing that, you know, two or three years ago. And he just looks leaden-footed and he just doesn't look like adept enough. It's just like, you know, if a Bass can do that on pretty flat pitches, I mean, imagine what English bowlers will do next year. I mean, can they really have any faith in him being a number top six batsman? I just can't see it.
Yeah, I mean, it is sometimes very difficult because around the world, I think this is going on. A lot of times, selectors just place their faith on some player and then, you know, they just keep picking them in spite of repeated failures. Sometimes it works out, but most of the time it doesn't. So, you know, for every Steve, you also have various other cases that did not work out like that, right? So yeah, it's a tough one, but I still think, like you said, they have invested a lot in him. I'll be very surprised if he doesn't start against India, though. I mean, Sean Marsh might be done, but I think Mitch Marsh will still be around, and he's exactly the type of player who India will bring into form. So you can be rest assured he will have a couple of centuries by the time we are done.
Oh, he looked a world beater. I mean, I must say, last summer when he played, he came into the third test against England. He got 180, and then he batted for about 3 or 4 hours to make sure a draw in Melbourne and got another century in Sydney. Look, maybe on true Australian pitches, he can get away with. I think he can get away with the weaknesses in his technique on those true Australian pitches. So in Australia, it could be dangerous, but I just, yeah, just in outside Australia, I just, he's just not good. Just got a good enough technique. And that's a big problem because they obviously want him to be a leader, maybe as a future captain. But at the moment, he's just a poor man, Shane Watson. It's a, you know, it's both bat and ball. And
that's not a, that's not a great place to be, right? If you're a poor man's Gary Sobers, you're probably good, but if you're a poor man's Shane Watson, then that's basically saying you're not good enough, right?
Well, as I posted on the Cricket Web, I mean, you talk about his batting average. If you think about it, compared to Shane Watson, he's got a lower batting average than Paul Rifle, who was a number 8 batsman who played a similar amount of tests. That's It is, it's pretty dismal. I mean, you got to be honest. I mean, he looks on certain occasions. Mitch Stark looks a more viable batsman than he more aggressive. He actually played quite well yesterday, and he looks like a number 7 or 8. And they can't afford him to be. Oh, he's not a good enough bowler anyway. So they've got a problem there. They've just got to hope that at least in Australian conditions, that this summer he can, recapture that form.
Yeah,
But
but I
anyway,
think there is one thing
oh,
that
go
I
on.
would like to, sorry, just one thing I would like to go back to is, when you're discussing or kind of dissecting Australia's performance in the UAE this time, the one thing that was not really spoken about that much when they did well, as in, reasonably well against India in India, was the pace attack, right? They had Stark and Hazelwood, and then when Stark was out, they had Cummins replacing him. And, for all the wickets that the spinners took, I think the part played by these pacers really was not documented well enough. They made the difference. There is a difference between, if you play out Lyon and the second spinner, and then you will get Siddle, and then if you get a Cummins or a Stark or a Hazelwood, there is a big difference. And I think they were the main reason that Indian batsmen could not get away as much as they could against other sides. And I think they missed that one of the guys. And I wouldn't probably thinking that, maybe if it was Cummins who was available instead of Stark, I think Australia might have done much better.
Yeah, that no, that's a good point. I think that hurt them. Hazelwood, I think he's a sort of bowler who needs pitches with a bit of bounce or seam on them. I think he's what I've seen him in the past when it's a bit of a bland pitch like these were, especially the first test. I don't think he would have made much impact, but definitely, if Stark had, well, he wasn't. I think he wasn't fully matchy because he'd obviously been injured for a while. I think he saw in the first innings on that when he especially when he roughed up Sarfraz Ahmed. I mean, he seemed to be getting really dangerous again. I was thinking, well, in the second innings he could be quite lethal, but of course he wasn't. He did actually get a wicket, but he wasn't fully hardly bowled because he was a bit, I forget, of some hamstring issues, which is a bit of a shame. But yeah, if he and Cummins, even just he and Cummins, had been opening the bowling, that would have been, made a difference because I think that hurt them because they didn't have that lethal edge. They were reduced to just treating Lyon as like a stock bowler, which obviously blunted his strike effectiveness. So it was like a vicious circle. And he, as well as he bowled, I mean, if you bowl that many overs, I think it just wears you down at the end. But yeah, that's a good point you make. Anyway, so we before I leave it at that, hope everybody here enjoyed this conversation, the inaugural, the inaugural appearance of Barani, Honest Barani, I think, on Cricket Web. So we hope you enjoyed. Yes, yeah. So follow us on the other Cricket Web Forum. I'm Quincy Wagstaff. And there's lots of always interesting cricket discussion. And hopefully we'll have, this goes all well uploaded. Well, if you're listening to it, then obviously it is. And hopefully we'll be doing another one soon. Probably about Australia and India preview. Until then, goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye, everybody.